All right, everybody, welcome back. The World Cup is underway. Thanksgiving is over. We have full bellies and full hearts. Andy, how the heck are you?
I am doing pretty well. I think I'm fully satiated from my Thanksgiving time with friends and family, and I'm getting quite satiated with my soccer fix this weekend too. How was your Thanksgiving, Paul?
It was fantastic, Andy. I got to watch soccer. I got to cook. I got to eat. It was everything I could want in a day. How about yours?
It was very good. Always great spending time with friends and family. A lot of those friends and family are some of our listeners. So a big shout out to all of you for keeping the dream alive for us, asking us all questions. I got many questions from my partner's dad, where we were discussing a little bit of soccer. So because of how well we were doing with our previous episode on Qatar, he wanted to give me a little shout out. So I'm going to give him a little shout out for this one. So thank you for your support, and thank you for everything in your conversation. Really appreciated it. So all that to be said, a very fantastic time. Shall we get into it, Paul? We've got a lot to cover that happened on this past weekend. What do you say?
Yeah, I say let's do it, but I do want to say nice brownie points for your maybe future father-in-law at some point. So nice.
Whoa! This is a soccer podcast, Paul. We're going to keep it to soccer. We're going to keep it to a round ball putting in the back of the net. That's how we're going to keep it there.
Hey, that sounds good to me. Oh man, so Group A, Andy. Oh my goodness. That oh my goodness is not just for this group. It's just the whole World Cup as a whole. The fact that after basically two sets of games, if you don't include the last two groups, basically every team has played in two games and no team has a spot locked up and only two teams are eliminated. And one of those teams is in this group, Qatar, coming out and losing to both the Netherlands and Senegal, and they're out. I mean, not really a big surprise here, but they're bottom of the group. But the other three teams, Andy, are all still in contention. What have been your thoughts on this group so far?
Well, it's very interesting because I've always heard that there's always a bump for the host nation. Usually the host nation is a team that can supply a World Cup and can sustain a World Cup. So I think it's funny that, you know, Qatar gets its World Cup bump by just coming into the World Cup, not having to qualify it. And we can kind of see probably from, you know, its performance that it was not up to standards there. But this is shaking out to be a very interesting group, where we have really all different corners of the world represented, in South America, or South America and the Americas, Europe, Africa, and then with Qatar representing Asia. Very interesting. I am very surprised of how well Ecuador is handled, but it was kind of called by you. What are you seeing in them that's or causing their, I guess, their success, or what is making them so tough to beat in this sense?
Well, for me, and I saw a lot of, or I wouldn't say a lot, but a decent amount of Ecuador just from watching Copa America, World Cup qualifying, following Argentina so closely. I got to keep an eye on Ecuador and kind of their, what they were doing as a team. But they're stout defensively. They control the game and they capitalize on their opportunities. And you've seen that with their forward Valencia. You've seen that with some of their other players. They're a tough nut to crack, Andy. They're hard to score against. And the Netherlands saw that. And obviously Qatar saw that, but they've struggled to score against pretty much everybody. So,
but yeah, that's going to be very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting for Senegal to be able to come up against that because of how well Ecuador has been playing. Senegal, who I think I had advancing, is making it tough for them, and they're going to face them next. So will Senegal be able to do that?
You had them winning the group, Andy, so we'll see how that goes.
Still can. Yes. Netherlands could draw and or win, as they're apt to probably do, and then if Senegal comes out roaring, who knows? But they got 3 points. They're in a good position to make it happen.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how Ecuador faces that, you know, a team that's playing to get in, because more likely than not, the Netherlands is going to beat Qatar and go through. So it'll be interesting to see. But right now, with the goal differential, Ecuador actually sits at the top of the group. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. And I mean, that's pretty much how all these groups are. But we got some craziness coming up this week, Indy, and I cannot wait for it.
Yes. I think one of the main sources of that craziness is also going to be in Group B. In Group B, we have England, who is at 4 points. Started with a dominant win against Iran. Was able to be a little bit more expansive in their attack, and they saw that work against Iran and really just put them to shame, put them to the sword. But in their second game against the United States, they, for long periods of time, looked like the worst of the two sides. Iran, in general, is just looking like not a strong team. However, they went and they beat a 10-man Wales. So this is setting up the next game to be a must-win, really, for both of them in order to advance into the next round. However, Wales, sitting with 1 point, has a chance. If they upset England, they may have a chance to find a way into the group. So lots happening here. But I really want to start on probably the biggest highlight, which was the U.S. versus England. Paul, what did you think of that cross-Atlantic rehash of the War of 1812 / American Revolution? What did you think? Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is the greatest battle since the War of 1812 / the American Revolution. So honestly, Andy, the United States to me looked like the better of the two sides. If you looked at the game as a whole, I think England had chances, had opportunities here and there. But I think the United States had the most clear-cut chance, unless you include Harry Kane's header at the very end of the game. But Weston McKennie having a half volley in the box, unmarked, where basically he just has to put it on target and it's in the net, but he blasts it over. I think other than that, I think the United States looked like the more dominant of the two teams. I mean, I don't know what you thought after watching that game, but the United States looked dominant across both halves for some moments here and there. And they also looked dominant in the first half against Wales. And I don't know, Andy, the youth, the energy, the ability to, and I keep commenting this to Z, my wife, for those of you guys who don't know who she is, the United States, this is the first time I've watched them in a World Cup, and they're pinging the ball around, possessing it well, confidently passing the ball between defenders, midfielders, forwards, and not looking like, oh my gosh, if they give the ball up here, they're going to be set on the counterattack immediately, which I think is how I've kind of viewed the teams in years past, where basically if they gave the possession up, they were instantly under fire. So I don't know what you thought watching those games, Andy, but that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, honestly, this is a very exciting U.S. team. One of the articles I was reading from The Athletic stated that really England was kind of thinking this was going to be a tough test, namely because of the midfield, and who they have in Sargent and who they have in Taylor, or I think it's Taylor Adams or Tyler Adams.
Tyler Adams, yep.
Yes, and how well they were able to contain their threats of an advancing midfielder. England, from my understanding, didn't really want to risk it against the United States, but they had opportunities to, because their own defensive solidity was okay for the most part. So it was definitely a draw. I think if there had to be a coin flip, I think USA has a strong point. But did the U.S. create a lot of clear-cut chances? Not necessarily.
No. Across so that's either the game, honestly.
Yes, and I think that's the issue the USA might be running into, is that they're a great unit defensively in the midfield, but they don't have enough creative spark, I think, to make it happen. And that kind of rests on Pulisic, but also, you know, who are the US's definitive, you know, attackers, strikers. A lot of them are like this, more in the midfield to attack kind of individuals. No one's going to be up there to hold the line and be that out and out striker that right. the U.S. might need to advance onto it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's been my biggest thing is they haven't had a go-to guy to get on the end of these crosses. I think Timothy Weah, I think, has looked like the United States' best attacking option off of that right side. He's looked the most electric, the most likely to beat someone and get into a dangerous position. He's scored the only goal for the U.S. so far. So I'm looking for him to step up, but I'm looking for Pulisic to step up, honestly, against Iran. Like, he's got to do something. And he rifled one off the crossbar against England from almost no space. And that was an exciting moment. But, you know, if it doesn't go in the back of the net, it doesn't do anybody any good. So I'll be looking for them to step up. And the United States has to get a win. I think Iran's going to play for a draw 100%. I think they're going to sit back. They're going to do what they did back in 2014 against Argentina in the group stage, where Argentina played for 92 straight minutes with some chances, no goals, until Lionel Messi pinged one from outside the box, classic Messi curler into the left side netting. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the United States reacts to a team that's, in my opinion, I think going to look to play for a draw and not for a win. So.
And I think that's going to be the toughest thing for the U.S. is if they're going to have someone that's not only seeking a draw in where kind of England was, but England had a little bit more, trying to go a little bit more advantageous. But if someone's just completely just sitting back in deep, like banks of four, hoping to hit him on the counter, that's where I can see the U.S. maybe being a little bit too, either too naive, or if they try playing out from the back too much and Iran decides that that's where they want to strike and really press them, we will see. So this is really setting up for a very good showdown. And we have two nations within a nation going up against each other in England and Wales. But you did mention Messi, and Messi had a similar goal, not as much curl as you had said in a previous World Cup. But for this one against Mexico, that was the perfect goal to unlock the offense to really save Argentina's chances at the World Cup. Walk me through what was happening in that game and how, even though it's a goal that was only scored 60 minutes in, that must have felt like the biggest relief on your end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was nervously rocking back and forth in my chair for 65 minutes of the game, just waiting for Argentina to unlock Mexico, because Mexico was playing not to lose, and they did so against Poland, too, where they didn't really create a ton of chances. They didn't really look to unlock Poland, and they certainly didn't look to unlock Argentina. They were totally playing for a draw in that they were hoping they could get through that game and then beat Saudi Arabia and get through on points. But so it was a lot of Argentina slowly moving the ball, trying to pick a way through. You have Di Maria on the right side play a ball to Messi, where he takes a touch, turns, realizes he's got a half yard of space, and just slots it. Like classic Messi, bottom right-hand corner, just far enough away from the outstretched hands of Ochoa.
Yeah.
I was going nuts. And then when, oh man, Eder Fernandez, I believe is his name, he comes in the 84th minute off of a corner, does a sweet step over, takes a touch around the defender and curls it just over Ochoa's hand to go 2-0. I was going nuts because it was a must-win game, Andy. It was a must-win game after shockingly dropping points to Saudi Arabia and honestly a lack of discipline. Argentina should have had probably 3 or 4 goals in the first half, but they weren't disciplined. The really high line of Saudi Arabia, the offside trap worked, and then Saudi Arabia gets 2 shots on goal in the early part of the second half and scores on both of them, and bedlam. I think I saw something that the Saudi Arabian president is gifting Rolls Royces to all of the Saudi Arabian players for that performance.
Could definitely see it. He also, I guess, announced a national holiday after the win against Argentina to celebrate it. So really kudos to the Saudi Arabian team, because the way they're playing, they are not playing like they're trying to hold on to a draw. they're going to play spoiler. And I think it's interesting you mentioned what you said against Poland and the Mexico, Poland-Mexico game, because I saw something a little bit different where it was more end-to-end, but it wasn't very like cohesive as a game. I think right. the idea of when Argentina dropping points, making that game being like, okay, both of you guys are the next biggest threat. And if we can get points here, let's go and get it. But maybe settling then to say like, hey, we'll go for a draw, get some points out of this. And we don't want to be, you know, have something happen to us against, or have Saudi Arabia, bedlam happen against us essentially.
Yeah.
So that, at least that's what I noticed. But I guess other thing I wanted to say to put in context with Argentina's goal, with Messi's goal in particular, is the way he hits it. When a ball is hit so low to the ground, it's basically like in baseball, where in baseball, it was always taught to me that like when you hit a ball straight on, like right back to the pitcher, that means you've timed it perfectly. That means you've got the most power and most precision mm-hmm. on that hit. Messi's hit was like that from a pass that was maybe, I want to say 40 yards, maybe on the ground to that. And then he struck the ball from 30 yards outside the goal. So he yeah. had so much power, so much precision in that shot. It was incredible against one of the best goalkeepers in the game in Ochoa. So really, really fascinating football that was played there. Got to highlight Lewandowski and his Poland goal as well from the group. If he got his first World Cup goal, maybe with that they can advance out. But it really depends on how they play against Argentina, which is set up for potentially a draw. Maybe for Argentina, they want to top their group. And that could be 3 points. So far we have our brackets okay or set for Group C. But again, it's going to come down to the last game, because if Saudi Arabia wins their game, they're at 6 points, and we'll have to see who comes out second, either Poland or Argentina.
Yeah. Well, if Saudi Arabia wins though, Argentina would be winner of the group on goal differential. So it's really interesting. You know, if Saudi Arabia loses and Poland and Argentina tie, then Poland and Argentina would go through depending on the score based on goal differential between Argentina and Mexico. So just like with right. all these groups, it's bedlam, and you guys yeah. will just have to pay attention to the points, the goal differential. That'll be the biggest thing to look at, 'cause it's the first tiebreaker. So, but right. one more yeah. quick messy note before we move on. I don't know if anyone noticed that Cristiano Ronaldo became the first player in soccer's history to score a goal in 5 separate World Cups. Messi's assist in the second goal against Mexico means Messi became the first player to assist at 5 World Cups, which is a crazy stat. And Messi is also now the youngest and the oldest player to have a goal and an assist in the same game at a World Cup. So he did it in 2006 at 19 years old, and then he did it a few days ago at 35 years old. So the dude's an absolute magician, and he's amazing.
He is something else. Again, we are in a fantastic age where we're seeing still the top two players in the world of Ronaldo and Messi, I think, duking out just one last time for this World Cup. They're going to pull all stops out. Moving on to Group D. This has kind of been the one group that's kind of followed to script. We have France at 6 points, with the first dominating game against Australia.
Which was closer than you might think, though.
Oh, definitely. At the start, Australia was really frustrating France. All of a sudden France, I think, just got a little bit of width into their play, started getting around the defense a little bit, and that's what struck Australia. But honestly, I think if Australia was able to handle that time of pressure, I think they might have gotten even more points. However, Australia was able to get 3 points over Tunisia. And you know, they're actually looking like a solid team, as you wouldn't expect from a team down under. Definitely yeah. the next team in Denmark. disappointing. I think we're seeing that their defense is aging a little bit, and their midfield, although good, is just doesn't have the legs.
And they don't really have a punch. They don't have a punch up top either.
No, someone
who's gonna get on the end of something and put a ball in the back of the net, like a Lewandowski or a Luis Suarez or an Ederson Cavani, or you know, take your pick.
Yeah, yeah. So really, what they were looking for is probably on their defense and trying to find some creative from their midfield, either in Højbjerg or in Christian Eriksen.
Or Andreas Christensen, who was their goal scorer in the last game against France.
Yeah, so however they're looking for, just they don't have that too much of a spark. And again, Tunisia, one point from their two games, not looking like they're going to advance, especially against a France that not only has all their players firing, but you add in a little bit of the French Tunisian, I would say like political history there. It's going to be a tough uphill battle, I think, for Tunisia to try to eke out anything more than a draw against them. So
yeah,
we will see in Group D how they advance.
Yeah. The Australia Denmark game is going to be really fascinating because it's basically those teams competing to see who goes through. And Denmark needs a win.
Yep. So. Yep. Because if they win, they're going into second. But Australia could be advancing and be the only team, I think, from Oceania to then advance into the quarterfinals for this World Cup, which will be quite fun. Group E, Paul.
Oh man,
what's happening with Group E?
Pandemonium. Absolute pandemonium, Andy, just like the rest of this World Cup. Yep. Spain comes out and beats Costa Rica 7-0.
Who called the pandemonium, Paul? Who is saying there's going to be a ruckus? Not saying that I've gotten everything correct in it, but I predicted a ruckus.
You did. Absolutely. I did not think that ruckus was going to include Spain going for 7 goals against Costa Rica. To be honest, Andy, Spain completed over 1,000 passes, had over 80% possession in that game. And when I sat down to watch that game and I saw the formation Costa Rica was coming out in, which was a 5-4-1, I was like, oh man, I called it to Z and said, Spain's going to have 75% possession. They ended up having, I think, like 82%, but Spain comes out and dominates Costa Rica. And I'm like, oh man, they're by far looking like the favorites. And then they come out today and give up a late goal to Germany to only get a draw there. So honestly, Andy, I think Spain's looking really good, but I think they have a lot of questions in the center of their defense. Yeah. And I also think that taking Gavi off in the 70-somethingth minute, Luis Enrique, I think that was the bad decision because bringing on Nico Williams weakened the midfield and Spain started giving up a lot of possession and Germany started getting more chances from their midfield. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause definitely the most shocking, I think, aspect of that is just how poor Germany has been, given that they can have someone that, you know, if Spain loses one player out of their midfield, Germany can go and attack and they can easily get a point, from there. But yeah, definitely they're looking like a team that's still the rebuilding team. This isn't looking like the team that won the World Cup in 2010,
2014. So,
2014, my bad. I don't know numbers at all.
It's all right. I got you. That numbers are my favorite.
Thank you. That's why this podcast works so well, Paul.
Yes, absolutely.
But yes. So seeing them and seeing their shocking result, it's not too unexpected, but is very disappointing given that this is still Germany. This is still a team as collective is known as just like the machine and that how they can just grind out results, but they're finding it difficult now. Really surprising how well Japan is doing. Japan, even coming into this World Cup, people had said like, you know, kind of watch out for them and how they work collectively. And we're kind of seeing, you know, as they work collectively, they're able to do it. But yeah, just shout out to Costa Rica for finding a way past a very strong collective Japan.
And Costa Rica has the chance to go through with a win over Germany. You know, it's possible. Like you said, mm-hmm. Germany has not looked great, and Costa Rica could find a way to win. I mean, it's not looking great because Costa Rica has had one shot on goal this tournament, and it was in the back of the net against Japan for a 1-0 victory. But crazier things have happened.
Crazier things have happened indeed. So we shall definitely see what happens in Group E. That's one to look forward to. Moving on to Group F. This one is probably causing the most chaos in that how far Belgium has fallen down, and Paul's dark horse, your dark horse, Canada. What happened, man? What's going on? They've been eliminated from the World Cup. What's going to happen?
I know. Well, so much for that call. Freezing cold takes. You can tweet that out.
Good Canada joke with the cold. I love it. Nice job.
Yeah. Well, there's also a Twitter feed called Freezing Cold Takes that take popular people on the news or sportscasters or whatever. And they give a bold prediction and it's the exact opposite happens. And then they tweet it out and it's called Freezing Cold Takes. But yeah, no, that's honestly, fun. Andy, their soccer has looked ice cold. I mean, they looked strong in the first half against Belgium, but then gave up a late first half goal. And then from there, they just never looked like they got their feet under them. They came out hot against Croatia, scored a goal in the second minute, Alphonso Davies, beautiful header. But then they played way too defensively and played to protect a 1-0 lead for 88 minutes. That doesn't work.
No. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. It sounds like they almost just lost their identity after that late goal against, what was it? Belgium. It was Belgium. Yeah. Like that just seems like that just took out all the wind in their sails of like what they thought they could do. So maybe that comes from just having a younger team, an inexperienced team in that sense.
Inexperienced. But yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of sad to see with a team that did look very promising and you were kind of wondering what could happen because there were every indication that they could be a dark horse given how well they had done in their groups and honestly looked like the best team coming out of CONCACAF.
Yeah. Agreed. And they just showed up at the exact opposite of showed up, whatever that is. I don't know what I'm saying. Morocco, I'm going to move on to Morocco. I can't talk about Canada anymore. Just wow, Andy. Just wow. They are looking like the Ecuador of Group F, honestly. They are hard to score against. They're electric when they have the ball, and they're beating teams that they, you know, most people would say shouldn't be beating, right? They get a good draw against Croatia, look like the way better team in that game. And they beat Belgium, who some people are viewing as the favorites in this tournament. Like, what?
Yeah, I gotta say it's Hakimi. I think Hakimi is the reason for that. He is one of the best right backs in the world in the club level. And it looks like they've kind of almost built, Morocco's almost built a team around them, or around Hakimi. And the right back position is a very, very important position in modern soccer, like the wingbacks or halfbacks. I think maybe they're called halfbacks for both sides. Fullbacks.
Fullbacks, yeah.
They are very important in the game because they're kind of now almost a midfielder, but they'll help out in possession in the middle of the pitch, but then they'll defend wide, but then they can also attack wide. So they have a lot of freedom with that. So I'm very curious in how Morocco is able to continue that against. I think that they're going to go up against Canada for the last game, so they could very much go on to top their group if they get the points that they need.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think they can. You know, they're playing Canada, who have nothing to play for, so I can see them getting a win there easily. I think Ziyech has looked great on the right side for Morocco. He's looking inspired, like you said, Hakimi. Honestly, the attack down the right side for Morocco is dangerous, and that seemed to be where all the chances were coming from. So, I don't know, man. We got so many interesting storylines here. Croatia started to look better. Croatia has actually given up the first goal, and I believe their last four or six. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners. World Cup games, they are known for giving up a goal and then coming back and scoring at least two. So I don't know. They're looking solid. I don't think they quite have all the pieces to make a very deep run like they did back in 2018, but I don't know. We got some interesting soccer ahead of us, especially out of this group, for sure.
They do, because they sound almost like Belgium, where it's just they're getting old. Like Belgium, for a time, were considered the premier team, given how the talent across the board of having, you know, some of the best center backs in the world, some of the best midfielders, having the best midfielder in Kevin De Bruyne, and attackers in Lukaku and others. But those individuals have gotten older, and as they have gotten older, they haven't aged well, kind of like a souring wine almost. with really just Kevin De Bruyne having to kind of do it all, whereas that's not his. When you have him do it all, you're taking him away from doing what he does best, which is, you know, throwing those passes to individuals both long and short all over the field. So it's going to be interesting to see these two old giants of Belgium and Croatia, who made the final in 2018. You know, them going at it to see like who can advance out of the two old fogies of the group.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to Group G, we have Brazil currently at 3 points with a great win against Serbia from Richarlison's goal. But we got some problems happening with Neymar. Headlines are always about Neymar and his weak ankles. And it looks like he's going to be out for, I think, the rest of the World Cup, if I'm not mistaken.
Just the group stages, from what I have heard. They're kind of going to reevaluate once the group stages are over. But it looked like his ankle was just really swollen, so maybe he has a sprain or something. So we'll see how that shakes out. I mean, good thing Brazil has four or five other forwards that can step up into those positions. Mm-hmm. I did hear that there's an illness kind of going through that locker room right now, which could really affect them. The only good news for them is they're in probably one of the weaker groups. So, you know, we'll see. I'm still thinking that they're going to win their group. But Switzerland looked good, picked up a nice win against a good Cameroon team. And Andy, you're going to have to remind me who scored for Switzerland. He was actually born in Cameroon. But after he scores his goal, he does not celebrate. He just, it was Embolo, Brielle Embolo. Yes. He just kind of didn't celebrate because he didn't want to be too taboo, showing good sportsmanship there since he could have played for Cameroon. So Switzerland looked pretty good. Well, I think they're the second strongest team in this group, but we'll have to see how Cameroon and Serbia do moving forward. You know, both, I think, have a big hill to climb, especially Cameroon, since they're going to be playing against Brazil too. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Hard to tell at this point with them only playing one game. But we can see after two games where it all stands. But given that there's been two wins in the group and not a tie, it makes it look like definitely Brazil and Switzerland are in the strong suit. Because mostly from what I see with groups, it's basically as long as you don't lose, you have the longest chance of getting a better result later on. Yeah. Looks like it's kind of what's happening in Group H. One team, Portugal, is able to beat Ghana with Ronaldo getting man of the match after converting his penalty to make him the only individual to have this ain't questionable, Paul. He has been the only individual to score in five different World Cups, which is quite a phenomenon. Have to say
it is.
That's a that's impressive, no matter how you look at it. But definitely want to get your take as the one that is competing against Messi the most in Ronaldo.
Yeah.
You had a nice note in here, so I wanted to get your thoughts on, yeah, well, what happened with this 6.6 player rating that Ronaldo got?
Well, the questionable part was Ronaldo's penalty. Do I see it as a penalty? Borderline, honestly. I think he makes a little bit more of a meal out of it than it is. And his only contribution was scoring a penalty, earning him the nickname Penaldo all over social media.
Mm.
But he got a 6.6 player rating. But apparently, from what I've heard, his man of the match is being voted on by the fans. So that's why I think he won man of the match, but I don't think he was Portugal's best player that day.
Yeah, so, that would make sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Because we'll have to see what they do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just have to see what they do moving forward. I think, me personally, I still think Ghana is the second strongest team in that group. I think they're young. They probably had a little bit of nerves first World Cup game playing against a strong powerhouse that is Portugal against Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. So they are going to have to turn it around after playing against, I think, the strongest team in the group, but we'll have to see. You know, Portugal still has a chance to drop points against Uruguay. Uruguay and South Korea kind of had a little bit of a pillow fight back and forth. Hmm. You know, no team really making too much of a splash in that game. Neither team really dominating. Yeah.
Sounds for like South it's Korea, violent. As violent as a pillow fight. The two of them. Sounds like it was as violent as that. Okay.
Yeah. I need more Son. I need more Heung-min Son for South Korea, Andy, because he's their best player. And whenever he touched the ball, something happened for South Korea. So he's got to get on the ball more. He's got to create more chances. He has to be their talisman and create their chances.
Yeah.
Uruguay needs to get Luis Suarez involved, Cavani when he's in the game. They have to put balls in dangerous areas and just put shots on goal. And that's going to be their best chance to win.
Definitely. And I think Uruguay do have the team around them to do that, but they just have to find the right combination, I think, to make that happen. So this group, we gotta see for that. But that's our rundown of the group stages for the first half. Next week, we'll be coming off with our whole group stage brackets of who is going to advance from there. Once the group stage is over. So
yes,
honestly,
yes,
at this point, we can't say who's going to advance, but it's going to be fun.
It's way too close to call. And we're monitoring the picks we made last time. And we will come out with that at the beginning of the show next week. We'll go through who got the most points. There is $20 on the line. Andy and I decided that was a good amount. So we'll tally those up. We'll release the results on social media and chat about it quickly on the show next week. And also talk about our brackets and who we think is the strongest team coming out of the group stages.
Yes, we'll definitely do that. So to finish off for our last segment of the podcast, Paul, who were your super sub or subs of the week from the World Cup?
It's got to be my boys from Japan, Ritsuo Doan and Takuma Asano, coming on. Doan came on in the 75th minute. He scored in the 75th minute after coming out in the 71st minute. So instant impact, instant super sub. And you know you got to have super subs in the World Cup. Guys who don't get a lot of playing time, guys who play in lower leagues, who come on and make a huge impact for their country. So he comes on and scores to tie the game 1-1. And then Asano, who came on in the 57th minute, then scores a second goal for Japan for probably the biggest upset so far in the group stages. For a 2-1 win over Germany and to set them up for the potential to go through to the knockout stages.
Yes. So that's what we're saying is as super subs, you guys can have this dream and come on and knock two against Germany and propel your team to further yourselves in the World Cup, which we are hoping to do for our respective teams sometime in the near future. Maybe we can be the official podcast of our teams. But
that would be amazing.
Thank you guys. That would be something else. Then I don't think we would just be the Gambia. We might be actually a team that could qualify for a World Cup. But any case, thank you guys so much for listening. Really excited to see what this next World Cup's or next part of the World Cup is going to have to offer with everything that is happening both on the field and off the field. So thanks for sticking with us. Paul has been Paul. I have been Andy. And with that, we're going to close out this podcast with a good old bye.
Bye.